Hey there, congregants. Take a seat. Yeah. Put your little keisters down. We have a real exciting service today because I know how much this generation loves to hashtag hustle. I know we live to hashtag grind. Time is money, baby. And I willfully and gladly, like so many of you gathered here, labor over 40 hours every week in this fine country just so I don't die if I get sick. The story must be told. Now, our first quarter earnings report came in, and I must say, great job, everyone. Just like how the Green Bay Packers are owned by its fans, we're the only church owned by its congregants. So, you might get a piece of that cheddar if margins are up, and if they stay up. But let's just see here. Okay, starting from the top, Crocroa stocks are up 2.3%. Wow. Big shout out to Devin there for spearheading the Just Crow It campaign. Great work, pal. Holy Greases are going gangbusters overseas, which rules. That means we're making a splash in the international market. And we're seeing a return of 7% on Holy Greases. That's huge. Unfortunately, our merch isn't performing like we wanted it to, and we're down 3%. But congregants, these are just numbers. Numbers that might mean we can afford to spread the wealth around a little. But hold tight. Before we discuss that, I'd like Brother Reed to read us a psalm. Brother Reed.
Thank you, Pastor Andrew. Little Timmy Tell taught himself Excel. He used it on the daily every week. He loved his calls on Zoom, worked from home in a small room, and never once complained, for he was meek. After working overtime, without seeing a dime, his boss called him into his office, true. He said, "Hey, little Timmy, you've worked till you got skinny, but pack up your desk, there's nothing we can do." Now, there's a lesson here for congregants who live in fear. From paycheck to paycheck, we must live. Corporations, the Abraxas. While we get fucked on taxes, so the wealthy and the rich might gladly live. The story must be told.
The story must be told.
Woo! Ha! Love that one. As a business owner, not a business owner, a faith leader. Yeah, faith leader, that'll do. As a faith leader, I love a good psalm like that. But don't go anywhere, Brother Reed. Why don't you read us a story?
This story is titled Undoing Nocturnal, written by the Sex Clown.
In September, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation announced its yearly Genius Grant recipients. Dr. Kerman Moss was sitting at home when the flood of emails and phone calls started arriving. Requests for donations, interviews, funding. He answered every one, delighting in rejection.
No, I'm afraid I can't help. I already have very firm plans with the prize, he said.
Dr. Kerman's work challenged preconceived evolutionary stable strategies in birds and mammals to test the flexibility of species within changing environments. As the planet warmed at an alarming pace, animals were going extinct en masse. Learning which traits helped a species endure and how to foster those traits could save the world's biodiversity. He had trained sparrows to build nests out of plastic, studied how gerbil kidneys refined oil, taught chimps how to shave body hair to reduce heat, the latter of which earned him interviews on late-night talk shows.
"It's not cruel," he told Carson Daly. "It's necessary work. I don't take joy in breaking these animals' habits."
Only he knew that this was not entirely the truth. There were days in his laboratory where he knew what God felt. On the toilet before the award ceremony, it dawned on Dr. Kerman Moss that he wasn't surprised to receive the award. He knew his work was important. He was more stunned by the money. All that funding, no strings attached, he could finally do the experiment. The one he first devised in grad school, that he had carried with him all these years just waiting for the chance.
And finally, a true visionary in applied biology,
announced television and film star David Schwimmer, the host for the year's award ceremony.
The MacArthur Foundation honors the incredible, the talented, the brightest of the bright. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Dr. Kerman Moss.
The crowd erupted. Distinguished authors, artists, and television commercial directors jumping to their feet.
Thank you. Thank all of you.
Dr. Moss beamed at the applauding crowd.
Believe me, you'll hear more from Dr. Kerman Moss.
The next day, Kerman invested $200,000 to construct a private bird blind outside Akron, Ohio. A contractor with a crew of 15 spent 2 months on the site, building what looked like a concrete bubble. A landscape architecture firm followed, filling the space with lifelike natural environments. $92,000 was spent designing false trees filled with microphones, video cameras, and most importantly, alarm clocks. The bird, a male North American barred owl, was loaned for free.
Tootsie here was hit by a drunk driver a year ago. He's just about healed now. By the time your experiment is done, he'll be ready to return to the wild, the ornithologist told Dr. Moss.
She stroked the bird's brown feathered head.
So, promise me you'll treat my ickle wickle Tootsie well.
I'll do better than treat him well,
Kerman told her. I'm going to teach Tootsie how to adapt. The next evening, Kerman, 6 biologists from the university, 5 co-authors on the forthcoming paper, 3 doctoral students, and a team of 9 undergrad interns loaded one owl into the bird blind. The enclosure, a concrete biodome 1 acre in size, was a copse of entirely artificial but convincing Midwest forest. Clay-rich soil, limestone, fake swamp ragweed, cut-leafed toothwort, and ersatz red oak, red cherry, and Ohio buckeye. The only uncanny element was the sound. Stepping inside for the first time, all Kerman heard was the shushing sway of fake leaves in artificial breeze. It was a perpetual moment before a rainstorm. The hair on his neck stood straight. The owl would be the only living occupant in the space, not even worms in the soil or mites in the faux foliage. He mistook omens for excitement.
It's finally happening,
Kerman tittered to himself. The intern transporting Tootsie to the blind pulled up in his truck, the bird perched on his gloved hand with a cap over his eyes.
He's a big sweetheart. Grasped my pinky with his talons the whole ride, just a hoot-hootin'.
Kerman removed the cap once they were inside, and the owl showed no fear of the students and researchers. It hooted and looked them each in the eye.
A remarkable specimen.
Kerman sighed as the intern unhooked the leash from the glove.
Let's see how he acts when he's hungry. Release!
The intern dropped his arm, and the bird took off for the false trees. Everyone clapped, the undergrads filming it all on their phones. Kerman's eyes were tear-rimmed. This was the experiment that would earn his place in history. He imagined his stubbly, broad mug on posters and libraries, next to Albert Einstein and Jane Goodall. Tootsie spent his first hour exploring the enclosure. He could not fly more than 200 feet in any direction. He passed the nighttime hours singing his hoo-hoos to the video cameras and hunting for rodents that did not exist. Tootsie had no name for the unholy silence, but by the wild fluff of his feathers, even the interns could tell he was stressed. As the sun rose, Tootsie found a perch high on a fake sugar maple. His feathers smoothed in relaxation. He closed his eyes and willed the strange new world away. Tootsie panicked, darting from tree to tree. It was enough to keep Tootsie alert and awake for 15 minutes before he calmed. He settled down on the sugar maple, folding his body in on itself. He took a deep breath and knew a single restful moment of slumber before Tootsie craned his neck to the sky and screamed an owl's cry of pure rage. The next morning, the owl endured the alarms, but the sounds did not end there. Strange machines whirred and screeched near the south wall of the forest. There were new occupants in the false woods.
Check out the tranquilizer they gave me,
the biggest undergrad said to the team performing the installation.
It looks like the real thing.
He aimed it at an intern, miming gunfire and mouthing the necessary sound effects.
Pow, 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 pow.
I told you we don't need it. It's an owl, not a bear. Put that down and help us. The undergrad sighed, setting down the gun to help with the final rivets. Its wood stock made it blend in with the mulch, and it was as good as gone. Tootsie arrived just in time to see humans disappear through a door in the trees themselves, and in the stench of their absence, the machine. Kerman watched the monitor. The undergrads had attached the device onto a fake tree, stuck moss to its sides with 3M strips in an attempt to nature it up. The device looked like a casino slot machine with a petite lever, just the right size and height for an owl's talon. He held his breath as Tootsie investigated the contraption, biting his fist as the bird pulled the lever.
That was a good call, rubbing a dead rat on the handle.
Kerman praised a doctorate student with a pat on the shoulder. When the lever went down, the team behind the observation glass burst into applause. The machine dropped a single food pellet to the ground. Tootsie ate the pellet and another, but spat out the third. It wasn't the same as swallowing a live rodent. He flew back to his tree and slept. That night, Tootsie flew from tree to tree, but he had nothing to do. He had hunted the last 3 nights and found not a single living creature. The trees didn't move right, and the silence was beginning to fill his head with strange noises. Imagined animal pips and squeaks, the sounds of birds he couldn't see. He ignored the daybreak sirens the best he could and slept on his fake sugar maple. The owl slept until hunger did what no alarm could do. It forced the bird awake. Overtired and starving, Tootsie flew to the contraption on the forest wall. He clasped the lever and yanked down 4 times in a row. He yanked and yanked until he had enough to eat. Then he returned to the maple and fell asleep. While the owl slept, Kerman adjusted the reward ratio and the tensile strength of the lever from within the control room. The owl slept through some of the night, but woke up around midnight. He flew to the machine and tried to pull the lever. It would not budge. When the fake sun rose at 6 a.m., the machine lit up and played the sound of a female owl's mating call. Tootsie hooted and shrieked and pulled the lever. It was difficult, but it moved. He had to flap his wings to help him budget, but finally the lever swung down to release crumbs. Tootsie scorned. Such a meager treat was hardly worth the effort, but his gullet twitched all the same. He bit the crumbs into his beak, swallowed, and struggled to pull the lever again. For the next week, the owl's sleep was unpredictable. Up for hours, asleep for an entire day, starving, pulling the lever and eating for an entire day straight. And then it happened. One day, Tootsie slept from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. He woke up at the sound of the alarm to go to work. He flew to the lever and put in a 10-hour shift. Dr. Kerman Moss bought donuts for everyone, and Melanie, one of the graduate students, made mimosas. Kerman had never had so much fun on the job and felt that familiar godlike feeling. Tootsie was not the confident owl he had once been. He could remember calling out his song into the night, a kill fresh in his talons. The entire world opened to him. Now, he was trapped. The lever was not hunting nor a game. It was toil. He yanked on until his talons cracked, but any hour he didn't toil, he starved. After 4 weeks of shifts at the lever, the owl stopped hooting. After 5 weeks, he stopped flying. Instead, he climbed down the fake tree like a ladder every morning and walked a clumsy avian shuffle to his destination. At the first pull of the lever, he'd make his only sound for the entire day, a low, ragged exhale. The feathers on top of Tootsie's scalp turned thin, then fell out. Worst of all, tired as Tootsie was at night, sleep was unbearable. Every position he turned his head or folded his wings was agony. His every dream was of the lever, that ever-changing lever. It eluded him and frustrated him, and yet it alone brought him food. He tried to remember what a rat looked like, but could not. The head was a blur of features, like a reflection in a rainstorm. The bird stopped sleeping. His brain would not skip to the lever, even if it meant relief. At 3 a.m., when he used to get his best kills, he climbed to the base of his home tree. He looked at the forest wall, that impenetrable mingling of trees and branches he could not traverse. He hooted at the black hollow in the middle of the branches, a smooth surface he had never seen in nature. He hooted a hoot unlike any owl. It was the hoot of desperation. He collapsed to the mulch, and his talons hit something harder than the soil. Hidden in the mulch, there was a strange, bent metal object. He scratched a talon over the length of it, catching hold of a small, movable piece of metal in the middle. It was not unlike a lever. He knew what to do with this. He pulled it, and there was a sudden bang that reverberated through Tootsie's whole body. A distant tree trunk burst in a spray of foam and plastic at the force of the dart. This was a better lever than the one he spent his days at. This lever provided immediate relief. It was a lever of power. Kerman arrived to the bird blind whistling a TV theme song. He had an interview lined up on 60 Minutes next week, his first bit of press since the MacArthur Award. It was the beginning. He imagined posing with a book in his lap, grinning his best grin for a cameraman. He could hear the man's voice. "Buddy, your face will be in every library in the country." Dr. Kerman Moss would live long after he died, and he knew pure pleasure. "Morning, Tootsie," he said to the observation glass as he went straight to the coffee machine. He liked to start his day at the same time as the owl. He felt it made them co-workers of sorts. His coffee mug full, the Garfield on the side hot to the touch. He returned to the looking glass. The pellet machine and its lever stood just on the other side, unattended. Tootsie was late to work. Melanie arrived shortly after with a couple of the interns. She noticed the look of unease on Kerman's face. "Everything okay?"
Yeah, it's, could you help me access the other cameras? I don't see Tootsie at the lever."
Melanie set down her bag and slumped into a rolling chair before a monitor.
"Sure, let's try the camera in the sugar maple."
The monitor switched, but the nest was empty.
Let's pull up the camera grid."
All 20 feeds appeared, and the two researchers scanned each one until...
"There, I see him,"
Kerman said, pointing at a feathery blur in the background. Except the shape was all wrong. Below the crook of the wing, a bent object seemed to shine.
"What is that he's got?"
Tootsie flew away before they could tell. He was flying again.
"Mark the time. We'll need this footage."
Tootsie flew through one camera feed after another, his flight path sagging and over-encumbered. Then he disappeared.
"Where did he go?"
Kerman heard that empty quiet again, the shush of synthetic branches. Melanie pointed a finger at the observation glass.
"Oh my God!" Tootsie smacked into the glass, an object cracking against the window far harder than any owl talon.
Kerman gasped at what Tootsie held.
"He's got a gun!"
The
owl fired at the glass, but with no real sense of aim. The tranquilizer dart cracked through, sending glass crashing to the ground and piercing the seat of a rolly chair. The intern started screaming, running for the doors, but the owl did not fire inside. The next shots were delivered point blank at the lever machine, blasting where the lever met the box to little effect. Melanie and the interns left for the parking lot. Kerman stayed behind to call 911.
No, I don't know how he got it.
He hadn't until now actually asked this question. This was America. It seemed possible that an owl, even one trapped inside a concrete sphere, could still find access to a firearm.
It might be 3D printed or a gun show. I don't know. Just come help.
Kerman tried to peer through the broken glass when feathers flapped and gunfire banged in his ear. Tootsie flew through the shattered window.
Hoot, hoot, toot, hoot, hoot.
Kerman fell to his knees and crawled out the open door, heart pounding up in his soft palate. He did not think to shut the door. Over the sounds of his sobs and the drum of his heart, he heard sirens wail, but not the ing, ing of the bird alarm. These were cop cars. The Akron police arrived on the scene. They surrounded the bird blind in their patrol cars. 50 officers leapt out of individual cars, crouching behind open driver's side doors for cover. Every gun was pointed at the open office door. The sheriff turned on a megaphone with a brief howl of feedback.
Come out, owl! We have you surrounded!
Inside the office, Tootsie saw what unnatural terrors were hidden behind the false wall of the forest. Charts hung on corkboards, analyzing his daily lever pulls, trying to maximize output. Photographs of the owl lined every wall and computer, Tootsie pulling the lever, eating pellets, sleeping on the job.
You've got to the count of five!
The sheriff shouted. Kerman watched the scene from the back seat of a cruiser, wrapped in a fleece blanket with tears on his cheeks. He watched the darkened doorway to the office, muttering the word, "No," to himself. The sheriff began his count.
One, two, three.
When Tootsie appeared in the doorframe, he had the gun clasped between both talons. Kerman saw now it wasn't a gun proper, but the tranquilizer the intern lost all those weeks back. He regretted calling the police at once. They would not know the difference. But it seemed Tootsie didn't either. His beak was wide open, hooting in defiance. He had been such a friendly owl, mild-mannered, a good lever puller. Kerman realized at once the point of all this. Tootsie wanted to die.
Fire!
The sheriff yelled, ducking behind his door and covering his eyes. Bullets struck Tootsie in multiple locations. Tootsie dropped the tranquilizer and fell to the ground and skid. As the hail of gunfire subsided, the officers could finally hear the anguished cries of Dr. Kerman.
He's just an owl!
Weeks passed. The research team was inconsolable. Dr. Kerman Moss appeared on the news again, but the anchors didn't smile or say, "Wow!" 60 Minutes kept their interview, but the whole time Leslie Stahl just scowled at him. When it aired, it ended with her standing up in a fit of disgust.
"The world is bad enough as it is, and you're teaching animals to use guns?"
Students picketed his university office, and teens egged his car. Kerman not only lost all his months of research and $1 million, but he felt like he lost a friend, too. Sure, he didn't know Tootsie in the wild, but he had come to know the workplace version of the owl, a much more sedate, internal kind of bird than what he saw in nature. Tootsie sighs as he pulled his first lever of the day, the way he yawned at 2 p.m. and slowed his efforts with post-lunch sleepies. Each struck a chord with the weary scientist. There were no findings to publish. However, Kerman did come to a conclusion, just not the one he set out to make. His findings were thus. By placing the bird in an artificial world and giving him duties beyond his natural inclinations, the experiment created a new predator for the owl. It was a predator Tootsie could only sense indirectly.
No physical touch, no hunting cry, no slashing claw or gnashing teeth. The bird could never escape the predator because the predator was its very environment. Surrounded on all sides by stress, Tootsie's mental health eroded with a constant hum of fight or flight. Tootsie committed suicide by cop because this was the only escape he could guarantee. Not even Dr. Moss's former co-authors listened to Kerman's speculation. The whole of academia derided him for his misuse of funds. One night, watching TV drunk on wine, he saw a late-night talk show host call him the world's worst genius. His face burned as a crowd of people he never met laughed at him. The repercussions continued without end. Kerman lost his position at the university. He could not secure further grants with his tarnished reputation. Without income, he lost his home, and unable to afford food, he took to begging on the street. He woke in the alley outside a lady's footlocker one morning. He heard the employees opening up for the day and caught a snippet of their small talk. "I was wondering when the next one was gonna happen."
"I'm just glad I wasn't this location."
It wasn't until nightfall he saw the day's newspaper and learned about yet another shooting, at a lady's footlocker no less. Reading the article, he recalled Tootsie. He gasped in pain. For a drunken instant he would not recall later, he felt immaterial jaws of an invisible predator close about his throat. He could feel teeth on his windpipe, the hot gust of breath on his skin. He did not struggle. He laid there silently and wondered what a natural human life might be. He had no guess. We are born in captivity, and the traditions are all lost. The story must be told.
The story must be told.
Great story, Brother Reed. I'm sure there's a lesson we can learn from that one, buried somewhere. All right, congregants. The big moment you've all been waiting for. I have good news, and I have great news. The good news is, the story has made more money this quarter than we ever have in the past, thanks to you. And now for the better news. Okay, since we're seeing such a sharp rise in our profits, we get to reinvest in the company. Yeah! And the better news on top of that, our top board members get a huge return on your hard work. Come on, look! You should all be very proud of yourselves. You've gotten to experience firsthand what makes this country the very best on planet Earth. And that thing is paralyzing financial immobility. Now, I expect Q2 to go even better. So let's hashtag grind and hashtag hustle and keep those numbers up, baby. And real quick, just a tiny bit of business here. There will be no cost of living raises. We gotta trim your healthcare down a little bit to save costs. So I gotta run. Please direct any questions you might have to Devin. The story must be told. Thank you for listening to The Story Must Be Told. I framed Santa Claus for murder. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at TSMBTPod. Yeah, I got his fingerprints off a glass of milk using tape like they do in the TV show CSI, one of my favorite TV shows on network TV because it teaches Americans to be afraid of cops. We have two flippin' books, you jerk. Go to www.thestorymustbetold.com and get both copies today. They're on fucking Kindle now, too. I posed as Santa's personal physician for 17 years and collected all sorts of his DNA-laden fluids. We got some freaking merch, too. Go to www.topatoco.com. It's impossible to spell. TOPATOCO.com and get a shirt, a mug, and we'll have stickers soon, too. I sprayed Santa's DNA all over a crime scene. There's no way he could argue with the science. Good luck, Chuck! Join our Patreon, www.patreon.com/TSMBT, and and get exclusive content, like our exclusive podcast called The 522 Club, where the gang chats story, pulls down the veil a little, and has some goose along the way. I bribed a fucking judge, and it was the easiest thing I've ever done, and I'll do it again. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new story. I posed as Santa's lawyer. I got them to throw the book at him, and I'm gonna be there when they tie him to a chair and the firing squad counts down from 10 to 1, then blam, blam, blam! No gifts this year for Christmas, kiddos. I'm Santa now, and I'm making some changes around here. Andrew! Jesus! I just don't like myself sometimes. I'm a fucking idiot. I'm a fucking idiot.
Surrounded by... I hate my stupid voice. And one day I'm gonna sell it to the mean underwater witch to gain legs. I'm real tired. The best I could do with was a Little Mermaid reference. I'm not proud of it. I haven't even seen that movie lately. I don't want this to be the outro. Adam, don't make this the outro. It's nothing I'm proud of. It was a reach and I didn't even grab it. It was a reach that failed, a drop, if you will. Do not put this in the outtakes. Or I'll get mad at you. I'll get so mad I'll slap you in the fucking buns, buddy. Jiggle, jiggle. I mean, if you want to, whatever.
The story must be told.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.